internal potency. Bal udayam, manifested by the strength of. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada. Translation: O Vidura, who can estimate or measure the transcendental time, work and potency of the gigantic form manifested by the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Purport: the froggish philosophers may go on with their mental speculations on the subject matter of the Virat, the gigantic form exhibited by the Yogamaya internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But factually, no one can measure such a vast exhibition. In Bhagavad Gita 11:16, Arjuna, the recognized devotee of the Lord, says, Anekabahu Daravaktra Netram Pashyami Tvam Sarvato Anantarupam Nantam Namadhyam Napunastavadim Pashyami Vishveshvara Vishvarupa. O my Lord, O gigantic Vishvarupa form, O Master of the Universe, I see innumerable hands, bodies, mouths and eyes in all directions, and they are all unlimited. I cannot find the end of this manifestation, nor do I see the middle nor the beginning. Bhagavad Gita was specifically spoken to Arjuna, and the Vishwarupa was exhibited before him at his request. He was awarded the specific eyes to see this Vishwarupa. Yet, although he was able to see the Lord's innumerable hands and mouths, he was unable to see him completely. Since Arjuna was unable to estimate the length and breadth of the potency of the Lord, who else would be able to do so? One may only indulge in miscalculation like the frog philosopher. The frog philosopher wanted to estimate the length and breadth of the Pacific Ocean by his experience of a well 3 cubic feet large. And thus he began to puff himself up to become as big as the Pacific Ocean. But at last he burst and died by this process. This story is applicable to the mental philosophers who, under the illusion of the Lord's external energy, indulge in estimating the length and breadth of the Supreme Lord. The best path is to become a cool-headed, submissive devotee of the Lord. Try to hear about the Lord from the bona fide spiritual master, and thus serve the Lord in transcendental loving service, as suggested in the previous verse. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. I am humbled and grateful to be here at the lotus feet of the Lordships Rukmini Dwargadish and in the presence of so many illustrious Vaishnavas. I seek your blessings so that I can speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam and the glories of the Lord. So I'll speak today on the topic of how understanding the Lord's greatness can inspire broad-mindedness within us. From the Lord's greatness to our broad-mindedness. That is the journey I'll take. And I'll take 3 points within that. First is how Arjuna appreciated the greatness of the universal form and that transformed him. Second is how devotion can be seen not just in certainty, but also in humility. That may manifest as uncertainty. And the last part will be how, with this understanding of devotion, we can disagree without being disrespectful. So let's talk about these three points. The first is the universal form. The theme of the universal form. Okay. So thank you. So the first point broadly is how the seeing the universal form transformed Arjuna. The universal form, as far as I have read, is like a unique revelation within world theology. There is the idea of pantheism, where everything is worshipped as if it is God. But the universal form is not pantheism, that everything is God, because there is a distinctive person who is revealing the universe to be his form. So in pantheism, God is distributed all over the universe, and then there is nothing left as the personal existence of God. So technically, if we want to use a word to describe what the universal form is, it's not pantheism, but panentheism. Panentheism means God is nature and God is more than nature. God is all of nature and God is much more than nature. That's panentheism. Now, universal form basically is a vision of how God pervades all of existence in terms of space and time. Because material existence has these two aspects to it, the space and there's time. So, Daiva Karmatma Rupinaha, as is said in this verse, that the works of the Lord, the actions of the Lord, spread his influence and his presence all over space and all over time. In concept, the universal form in the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam are similar. In detail, these two universal forms are slightly different. In the Bhagavad Gita, the universal form that is shown is a revelation coming from Krishna. So we could say it is more like a top-down revelation. Whereas in the Bhagavatam, it is, especially in the second canto and in various prayers where it is described, primarily in the second canto, it is more of a conceptualization. That means those seekers who want to appreciate the greatness of the Lord, they start conceptualizing, conceiving, visualizing that the mountains are like the bones of the Lord. The river, the lakes are like the water in the navel of the Lord. Like those. So it's a more of a bottom-up conceptualization. But the idea is the same. The idea is to see God in nature. And in the case of Arjuna, he had heard the Chaturshloki Gita. And that's in the 10th chapter of the Gita, where 10.8 to 11, Krishna establishes his supreme position. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate. Everything comes from me. Everything is pervaded by me. So, then Arjuna also accepts that. Param brahma param dhama pavitram paramam bhavan. He says in 10, 12, 13, he unambiguously accepts Krishna's supreme position. But thereafter, in the 11th chapter, he says that Manyase adi chakyam mayadrashtumiti prabho yogeshwar tato metvam darshayatmanam avyayam. If it is possible for me, please reveal this form to me. Reveal which form? Rupamaishwaram, the form by which you pervade all of existence. And then Krishna reveals that form. And initially, Prabhupada quotes one of the earlier verses in the start of Revelation. So the universal form is described in a very distinctive way in the Gita. So if we are going to see something extraordinary, something like which we have never seen. So say, if completely, we have beautiful exhibits over here of Prabhupada, and we may have other exhibits. So some person who has come completely new, they may have no idea. So while we are walking with them, they will say, this is what you are going to see over here. And then when they see it, we explain, this is what you are seeing. So the universal form is so inconceivable, so extraordinary, that the Bhagavad Gita uses a triple narrative structure to describe it. That means from verses 5 to 8 in the 11th chapter, Krishna describes to Arjuna what I will show you. Like we are walking along, this is what you are going to see in the exhibition. Then from the verses 10 or rather 11 to 14, Sanjay describes to Dhritarashtra what Krishna shows to Arjuna. And then from verses 15 onwards, 15 to 30, Arjuna is describing what he is seeing. The same form is described three times. And it's fascinating that what is present and what is absent in each of these descriptions. Of course, Arjuna's description is the longest. As he's seeing the universal form, he's describing what he's seeing. But initially, what is the emotion? Adbhutam harshito me. This is astonishing. I'm struck with marvel. I'm struck with vismay. I'm struck with astonishment. That's his initial emotion. But around the 22nd, 23rd verse, bhayena cha pravyathitam mano me, he starts going into fear. Bhaya. Fear. And then he becomes so fearful. Shamam Vishnu. He says, my mind is just not peaceful. I can't understand. What is this? And then what is happening? Finally, in 31st verse, he asks, Akhya himeko bhavanugra rupo. Who are you, O fears of form? Prabhupada is a very poetic translation of that verse. O fears of form, who are you? Now that might seem very strange. Because just in that same narration, in the 16th verse, Arjuna has identified, Pashyami Vishveshwara Vishwarupa. I am seeing the universal form. Then he's asking, who are you? So if he's already identified, why is he asking, who are you? So the idea is, that suppose say we are walking with going for a walk with an old friend whom we have met after a long time and just chatting, and suddenly a group of dozen thugs attack us, and out of nowhere our friend starts exhibiting some martial art moves, and within 2 minutes all those dozen thugs are knocked down, and we may look at him, who are you? So when we ask who are you here, what are we asking? When we see something unfamiliar in someone familiar. Who are you? I thought I knew you, but what is this? Who is this feature? How did you become a martial art expert? So similarly, when Krishna is showing this universal form, Arjuna knows about the universal form. Krishna has shown it earlier to Duryodhan. Arjuna has not seen it, but that concept is not unknown to him. And to some extent, he knows what to expect. And Krishna has shown the universal form even to Yashodamai. But in those times, Krishna has never shown his Kala Rupa. He has not shown the Vishwarupa can be referred to the form of the Lord that pervades across space. But specifically in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also shows an additional revelation. That is, how his influence spreads across time. So what that means is, Arjuna's emotion changes from astonishment to fear. Because initially he's marveling how from the bottom, Nabhaspruśyantam, right up to the sky, the form is pervading everywhere in all directions. But then suddenly he starts seeing something. Oh, that form is not just emanating fire in abstract. That fire is actually coming to the Kurukshetra battlefield. And in that fire, the warriors are getting scorched. And then after a few moments, he says, the fire is disappearing. Fire is not so much prominent. But now, the warriors on the battlefield are drawn into the mouth of this form. And they're just getting consumed. They're getting destroyed. Some of them are, as they're entering into the mouth, some of them are actually crashing into the teeth of the Supreme Lord. And churnitair uttamangai, that they're... Their head is cracking apart. And then when the head cracks apart, blood comes out. And when blood comes out, the universal form is taking out the tongue and licking the blood. Leliyase grasamana samantar. And Arjuna is thinking, what is this? I have never seen anything like this. So what is Krishna doing over here? So this is what unnerves him. So to just understand a metaphor. Say we are watching some like action movie, and while we're watching that action movie, then suddenly something, this seems to be like not a very, very violent movie. It almost seems like a horror movie. There's some big, huge monster, and that seems to be devouring everything. And then we see suddenly, hey, this monster is not just somewhere far away. This monster seems to be destroying everything in my vicinity. The house where I'm staying, the monster seems to be destroying that. That's like for Arjuna, suddenly there's giant form is destroying what is on the Kurukshetra battlefield. And then suppose we are seeing such a horror movie, I don't want to watch it. And you try to switch it off. and the remote doesn't work. What's happening? So Krishna, Arjuna will later tell Krishna, Krishna, I don't want to see this form. And Krishna teases Arjuna, hey, this form has never been seen by anyone. Don't you want to see more of it? He said, no, I don't want to see more of it. So what happens over there is that this Kala Rupa, Krishna shows Arjuna for the first time. And because of, and why does Krishna show Arjuna the Kala Rupa? See, the expertise of a teacher is that whatever question the student asks, the teacher answers this question, but also gets back on the subject. Otherwise, sometimes in answering a question, you just go tangentially anywhere. So the subject of the Bhagavad Gita is that Pucchami Tvam Dharma Sammoodhacheta. Arjuna needs to know what is the right thing to do. And for Krishna, the answer is that Krishna wants Arjuna to be his instrument in establishing dharma in the world, in establishing order in the world. So Arjuna should do his duties, but with dispassion, with detachment. So, and in the mood of devotion, as the Gita's flow progresses. So what Krishna does is, the sight of the universal form could just be for education or entertainment or just a break. It is not seeing the universal form itself is not essential to what Krishna's answer to Arjuna's question is. But what Krishna does is that he, by showing the Kala Rupa, brings the subject back to the battlefield. And he says that everybody, see, like if we see that, oh, the home where we are in, that is going to be destroyed by this monster. And then we may get scared, what's going to happen? So when Arjuna asks this question, who are you? So Krishna does not say, I am Krishna. Krishna does not say, I am Vishwarupa. What does Krishna say? I am Kala Rupa. Kalosmi Lokakshaya Krit Pranodha. Like going back to that friend who is suddenly a martial art expert. We may ask, who are you? He says, I am your friend. No, that's not the answer I am looking for. I say, I am a karate black belt. Oh, okay. When did you become that? You may ask. That's why Krishna answers, Kalosmi. He understands what Arjuna is asking. And it's interesting. Sometimes there is a limitation to how much can be depicted through art. So usually when we see the Vishwarupa, what we see is that, say, Arjuna is here, Krishna is here, and Krishna is showing the universal form here. But Acharyas explain that once Krishna starts showing the universal form, Arjuna is no longer able to see Krishna. So that's why Arjuna is not turning to Krishna and asking, hey Krishna, what is that? Because there is no Krishna to ask. Only this fearsome form is there, and that's why he's asking, who are you? Who are you? So Krishna then assures Arjuna that Rite Pitvam na Bhavishyanti. So the time I am, the destroyer of the worlds, I have come to destroy here everyone except you. So you are safe, you are not going to be destroyed by this. Now the word Rite has two meanings. One is except for you, and the second is even without you. What it means is, except for means you are safe, you are not going to be destroyed. But even without you, what that means is, Krishna tells Arjuna that there is a higher plan by which this destruction on the Kurukshetra battlefield is happening. And you cannot stop it. If you don't do it, someone will do it. And they will get the glory. If you do it, you will get the glory. So the idea is, Krishna is bringing the discussion back to the point. Arjuna, do your duty. Don't think that if you don't fight, Bhishma and Drona will not die. Their death is arranged, ordained by a higher arrangement. They are going to die. And then Krishna also implies to Arjuna that you think you are the well-wisher of Bhishma and Drona, and therefore you don't want to kill them. But actually, I am their even greater well-wisher. Suhrudam sarva bhutana. I am their greatest well-wisher. I know what is best for them. And if you fight as my instrument, not only will you get glory, but even they will get an auspicious destination. They are circumstantially trapped by obligation to fight on the side of vice, on the side of evil. But they will be freed from that. You will be doing good to them also. So what happens through Krishna's vision of the universal form? Arjuna has a small conception. That he's thinking, either I fight to win the kingdom or I renounce and let my relatives live. Krishna reveals to Arjuna something far bigger than what you are thinking is happening over here. You are a part of something far bigger than what you are able to understand. And therefore, just do your duty. So Arjuna becomes inspired and convinced by that, and he becomes ready to fight. So basically, when we understand the Lord's greatness, how did understanding the greatness of the universal form transform Arjuna? It helped Arjuna understand that something far bigger is happening than what he was thinking. And if we understand this, then that can also bring about some level of humility. Prabhupada says in the purport that the best path is to become a cool-headed, submissive devotee of the Lord. It's interesting, these two adjectives he uses, cool-headed and submissive. So submissive means we are always in a learning mood. And cool-headed is when we see something that is not going the way we think it should be going, we don't get angry about it. Now, some people like to play dangerous sports like bungee jumping. Jump from helicopters or jump from mountains. And we think this is dangerous. This is an unnecessary dangerous. Why risk your life like this? And we may think, I'll never do something so foolhardy. But actually, we often do also some jumping. And that jumping might be even more dangerous. What is that? The most dangerous jumping is jumping to conclusions. Jumping to conclusions. Oh, this person is doing like this. Must be a fool. Must be a deviant devotee. Must be lazy. Must be selfish. Must be manipulative. Just see some action and jump to conclusions. So, the idea that there may be something bigger going on that I need to understand, that maybe I don't understand right now. That's what Arjuna gets the understanding. So, that was the main point of the class. I'll just make two more quick points as a follow-up. That when we have devotion, see, from devotion, we could go two pathways. One is devotion is manifest as faith. I have faith in scripture. I have faith in Prabhupada. And that's wonderful. And that faith can lead to certainty. Certainty. This is the right thing. And there's nothing except this. That's right. I was in Texas in the Bible Belt. I saw one slogan on a car. He says, God said it. I accept it. That settles it. So, that is faith of, that is devotion, very proudly manifested as certainty. Well, okay, what exactly did God say? Okay, you can say, even if we the Bible is authoritative, but okay, God said it. You accept it. But does that settle the issue? Because even in our case, God may have said many different things. Srila Prabhupada may have said many different things. So, sometimes, devotion manifested as faith is presented as certainty. And that certainty is sometimes seen as, oh, this person is so certain about it. They must be a great devotee. They have so much faith. Well, possibly, but not necessarily. Why? Because another sign of devotion is humility. And humility means that maybe I don't know things. Humility, there's many different ways to understand humility, but especially in terms of our interactions with others. Now we could phrase humility as the openness to the possibility that what the other person knows may be more important than what I know. I know a lot. Maybe I know 100 times more than the other person. But in this context, what the other person knows may be more important than what I know. So, if I come to give a class, now I may have a lot of known knowledge and audience, not here of course. Here all of you are far more learned and realized than me. But if I go to some place, I may have more knowledge than the audience. And maybe even the person organizing the program is a new person. But maybe the organizer knows something about the cultural dynamics of the place. Maybe they know something about the sensitivities of the audience. Maybe I am thinking these are people who know something about the Bhagavad Gita. And these are people who know nothing about the Bhagavad Gita. So the information that the organizer has may be far more important than all the information I may have. So humility, you can say, is openness to the possibility that what we don't know may be more important than what we know. And that applies to... So if we have humility, one way it may manifest is uncertainty. Okay, I'm not exactly sure what is to be done over here. And uncertainty, it's not necessarily a sign of lack of faith. Achintya bheda bheda. our very core philosophy. What is the absolute truth? Personal or impersonal? Both. So that comfort with contradiction is in ground, is foundational to our philosophy. The absolute truth is both personal and impersonal. And Srila Prabhupada also, in his famous Markine Bhagavad Dharma song, he says, my dear Lord, why have you brought me here? That, Ache kichu karja tabe ye anumane. Nahi keno ani bena ehi ugrasthane. He says, Anuman, Prabhupada often condemned Anuman Pramana. That is speculation, Prabhupada would say. But here Krishna is praying to Krishna. Krishna, I think, maybe you must have some purpose. Otherwise, why would you bring me here? But I just don't know what the purpose is. You make me dance. Make me dance, O Lord. So Prabhupada writes in a letter to Sumati Moraji that I'm experimenting in different ways to attract these Western people to Krishna Bhakti. So Prabhupada was experimenting, trying. Does this work? Does this work? Does this work? So strong devotion can also manifest as humility, and humility can manifest as uncertainty. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't judge so quickly. And this is right and this is wrong. And that brings me to the third point, that when we have differences of opinion or we have differences of perception, when there are basically differences of any kind, there are sociological surveys, we say that differences, we know this Kali Yuga, differences are there everywhere. But often differences lead to greater conflicts within religious organizations than in non-religious settings. Why is that? Because differences are immediately given a moral significance. That what happens is, in religious organizations, disagreement is frequently equated with deviation. You don't agree with me, you are a deviant. And then that leads to a lot of unfortunate and unnecessary polarization. So Srila Prabhupada, he has built a house in which all of us, he wants all of us to live together. And of course, that doesn't mean that there is no deviation possible. Deviation is possible, and we need to avoid that. We need to protect ourselves and our movement from that. But instead of presuming that when something we don't understand, that means this is wrong, this is deviant, maybe we can have that humility too. We can, okay, let me inquire. Let me find out what is going on over here. If Krishna's glories are so great, then maybe Krishna is revealing something through this devotee or to this devotee. Maybe Krishna is inspiring this devotee to serve in a particular way. That Krishna is not inspiring me. And that's why I feel this is off. But this devotee is convinced that it is good. So let me try to understand. We often look only at what this devotee is doing or what this devotee is not doing in relationship with Krishna. But maybe let me look what Krishna is doing in relationship with this devotee. How is Krishna inspiring this devotee? Let me hear. Let me try to understand. And so many conflicts which sometimes become, it's a harsh word to use, fratricidal, where devotees keep fighting with each other. We are all in the same family of Srila Prabhupada. Those can be minimized if appreciating the Lord's greatness could help us see that there are many ways in which Krishna can act, in Srila Prabhupada can act, inspiring different devotees in different ways. So rather than presuming I know what is right and wrong, maybe we need to be open to explore and then understand. So I'll summarize. I discussed three main points. First was that how appreciating the Lord's greatness can bring broad-mindedness. So how that happened for Arjuna. He was thinking just simply, I am fighting for a kingdom or I'm not fighting to protect my relatives. But Krishna, through the Virat Rupa and specifically the Kala Rupa, revealed how something far bigger was going on. And he had opportunity to be a part of that bigger reality. And he realized how small his conceptions were. The second point was that we often think of devotion as manifesting as faith, which will lead to certainty. This is right and this is wrong. But devotion can also manifest as humility, which can manifest as uncertainty. Maybe I don't know something which is important and I need to know. So that can help us reserve judgment. And that can help us eventually to disagree without being disrespectful. That maybe something bigger is going on, and let me try to understand rather than judge. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments, Sister? Yes, please ask. Bro. We have a mic.
So awesome. Thank you. Thank you for a wonderful class. I was just wondering, in the purport, Prabhupada says that Arjuna couldn't really understand the potency of the Lord, or as he says, that he couldn't understand, unable to estimate the length and breadth of the potency of the Lord. So I'm wondering, you know, in Krishna consciousness, we're trying to understand who Krishna is. So if Arjuna, who is so close to Krishna, if that's he's incapable of understanding the full length and breadth of the Lord, so what about us? What do we try to understand about Krishna or who Krishna is?
Yes, thank you. If Arjuna can't understand Krishna, then what is our hope? If Prabhupada addresses this in one of his lectures on 10.9 in the Gita. There's a very interesting dynamic in the Chaturshloki Gita. 10.8 Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhu mattaha sarvam pravartate iti matva vajante maam buddha bhava samanmita. Those who know I am the source and sustainer of everything, they are buddha. They are enlightened. So buddha is a cognate of buddha. So these are enlightened souls. And the next verse says, what do these enlightened souls do? Machitta madgata prana bodhayanta parasparam. So he says, they think about me, their lives are devoted to me, and they enlighten each other about me. So, Krishna has already said that they are enlightened. So, if they are already enlightened, why are they enlightening each other? So, the idea is, in bhakti, enlightenment is not a destination. It is a journey. Prabhupada says that Krishna's glories are unlimited. And although a devotee knows Krishna, a devotee keeps knowing Krishna. And we may know Krishna from one perspective. Another devotee knows Krishna from another perspective. And that's why when two devotees have bodhayanta parasparam, they discuss each other, they learn more and more about Krishna. So when it is said that Arjuna also couldn't estimate the length and breadth of Krishna, that means it's impossible for any of us to know Krishna fully. But definitely we can know Krishna enough to love him. And if we are approaching knowledge of Krishna with a devotional attitude, then the more knowledge we get, the more our attraction to the Lord will also increase. Because the more we'll understand how lovable he is. So in that sense, there is this, we could say again, achinta that bheda bheda, that inconceivability pervades all our whole philosophy. At one level, our strength, Prabhupada would say, when talking with the Christian tradition, you don't know God, you don't know what he looks like, you don't know what he does. Without knowing God, how can you love God? And that is, Prabhupada would say, that we have a very clear revelation. So we have God's name, we have God's form, we have God's address. We can take you there also if you want. So in that sense, we do have knowledge. And yes, in the bhakti tradition, the specificity, the clarity with which there is the revelation of God is unique. It's not self-congratulatory. This is just objective. But at the same time, while we acknowledge that there is knowledge about Krishna, but at the same time, we also acknowledge there is so much to know about Krishna that we will never know him fully. So we can know him enough to love him. That's how. Does that answer the question? Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very wonderful, brilliant class. My question is this. Say, as a devotee, you observe some behavior in another devotee, which you think is not, you can't understand it, it doesn't seem appropriate to you. So what is the way to address that? Should you just keep your mouth shut and just in your mind try to see the big picture and just, you know, give that person the benefit of the doubt, see the big picture? Or is there a way to address that? Like, for instance, I once was told this anecdote that Prabhupada went with Jai Pataka Maharaj to see Lalit Prasad because they were very concerned about the way he was managing the properties or the legacy, you know, properties of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Lalit Prasad was superior, he was Prabhupada's senior, and Prabhupada asked, he said, do you think it is correct that the legacy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, you know, being handled like this? So afterwards, Jai Pataka Maharaj asked Prabhupada, because, you know, Prabhupada was kind of criticizing, But he asked Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada, why did you ask a question? Why didn't you just make a direct statement? He said, because that's the etiquette, you know. Vaishnava etiquette is that if you want to find some fault with a superior, you can ask a question, but you can't. So in other words, could you say, how do you deal with these types of situations among devotees?
Yeah, it's tough. So if we see something which we find objectionable or questionable, then what do we do? Well, when I was talking about not jumping to conclusions, that does not mean simply being apathetic. We can't literally close our eyes and close our ears. Now, we are, as servants of Srila Prabhupada, as servants of the Vaishnavas, it is also our responsibility to try to preserve the legacy of Srila Prabhupada. So, if we feel something is wrong, then yes, it is our, it could be our duty to do something to fix it. But what can we do? First thing, as you yourself pointed out, is that no, don't assume that we know. Or even if we know, have a tone of humility. That, you know, maybe this is, I couldn't understand what you're doing. If you say, Arjuna also asks Krishna, Katham etad vijaniyam tamadav proktamaniti. When Krishna says that, I give this knowledge to sun god, Arjuna says, hey, you are bluffing. You can't give it to sun god. Sun god is so old and you are just equal to me. He doesn't say that. He says, yeah, he states the fact. He says, we are more or less contemporary. The sun god is so much older. How am I to understand that you give this knowledge? So, sometimes the attitude makes a huge difference, how a question is raised. And instead of saying, no, how can you do something like this? You know, this is what Srila Prabhupada said, this is what you are doing, how can I understand this? So that's one thing, if we have that relationship, two things, if we have that relationship with that person, or if we have very strong concern about it, then we could just approach that devotee and ask him. And maybe they will give some explanation and things will become clearer. Many times, one of the Ravindra Swarup writes in one of his papers that the characteristic of Kanishtha Adhikari is that they talk about each other instead of with each other. Oh, you know, this devotee did like this and that devotee did like that and that devotee did like that. Just talk. You know, of course, respectfully, but just talk. So a lot of misconceptions can be avoided if we just talk with each other. And then if somehow that devotee is too defensive or too aggressive, is not ready to talk with us, that somehow the dynamic is not working, then maybe we can talk with some senior devotee who knows that devotee and who knows also. And then we can try to gain some understanding. So if we really feel something is seriously wrong, then we may have to maybe take some further action, report to some authority. So broadly, you know, if you look at Srila Prabhupada's lives also, when something undesirable was happening, you could say his responses were in three broad categories. Tolerate, mitigate, or emigrate. So, for example, when Prabhupada was with Sally Agarwal, staying in Butler, Pennsylvania, his bhoga for Krishna was in the same fridge where she was having meat. And she recognized that, you know, the Swami, this should not be like this. But she said, Swamiji, we have only one fridge. And Prabhupada, think nothing about it. Now, if somebody in a temple fridge had kept something like this, Prabhupada would have thought a lot about it, spoken a lot about it. But at that time, that was just a passing destination for him. It's just tolerated. So tolerance, what we could say in one sense, what does it mean? Tolerance means to keep small things small so that we can focus on big things. So for him, this is a small thing. He's staying at this place for a short while. He's basically come there to preach. And when he finds some opportunity, he'll go there. So there are times when Srila Prabhupada tolerated. Then if we consider, there are times when he was in Jhansi. And he was planning to start the League of Devotees. Prabhupada had grand ambitions. At that time, after World War I, they had started League of Nations. So Prabhupada had taken that nomenclature and started League of Devotees. But then the same people who were working with him started working against him to drive him off the property which he had worked to develop. And Prabhupada, what did he do? Emigrated. He, for various reasons, he felt this is not worth fighting. He said, Jhansi is a small place. These people are more pious than spiritually dedicated. My Guru Maharaj wanted temples to be built in big cities. Just leave. It's not worth fighting. He could have fought, but emigrated. But later on, when something similar happened to the Juhu property, at that time, Prabhupada wrote a letter to life member, Mr. N wants to take this Krishna's land. He will have to do it over my dead body. So Prabhupada mitigated. He fought at that time. So broadly, we can say we have these three options, depending on how important we feel the issue is. So that how important we feel the issue would be dependent on, say, one thing is our own disposition. Somebody would just can't tolerate something wrong around them. They have to do something about it. Even they think that is wrong. It could also depend on our position. Now, if we are in authority position in some role, then it is our responsibility. So based on our position and our disposition, we can decide whether to tolerate, mitigate, or immigrate.
Thank you.
Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Sita Gaur Premanande.
Should have gone longer.
Thank you. Thank you. Look forward to your meeting at 3 o'clock.
Your
office?
Yeah.